The Jen, Gabe, and Chewy podcast is sponsored by Celsius Energy Drink, and I am here to tell you it makes a huge difference in my mornings. With a unique blend of essential energy and key vitamins, Celsius is your partner to an active lifestyle. My favorite, the peach vibe. Learn more at Celsius.com and pick up Celsius Energy Drinks today. She wants to ride it, she's trying to hide it. I'm cool as ever, she's too excited. Her man look like he wanna fight. He ain't doing nothing but running his mouth. Lots of stuff to get to this morning, but this just came across my feed. And I know Joshy said that he saw it last night. Chewy, did you get to watch the Ohio State-Oregon game? Did you get to see how that shook out at the end?
Yeah, I did.
So Dan Lanning has now said that that situation where they had 12 men on the field, they were penalized for it. There was a runoff on the clock, which put Ohio State in a very compromising position. He has now gone on the record saying this is one situation we had obviously worked on. Are you surprised that coaches now are sort of finding loopholes to help in these end of game situations, high pressure situations that, you know, they're penalized for by the letter of the law, but it actually looks like a pretty genius move because it really put Ohio State's back against the wall. And then, of course, their quarterback went out there and made a boneheaded play to end the game.
Yeah, there are like accountants, you know, dealing with taxes are always looking for that loophole. I mean, I think it started with Belichick. I believe it was either Belichick or Vrabel where they took a penalty at the... Was it Vrabel where he took the penalty at the game and everyone is like, what the hell are you doing? But after they figured the whole thing out, it was a smart call. So, no, I don't have any problem with them, you know, pushing the envelope.
So I'm glad that you say that because you watch it and you go, oh, that's brilliant, genius, way to use a loophole in the rules to put your team in a better position to win the game. Mm-hmm. But we had a lengthy conversation on College Game Day this week about guys flopping in college football. So sometimes you get these teams that are running these high-powered offenses and this pace, you know. Who's the coach? Was it Chip Kelly? Was it Chip Kelly that used to do it? At Oregon, run the, like, fast,
yes.
No huddle offense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of these teams are doing that. They're trying to, you know, keep the defense on the field, get them tired, et cetera. And so what defenses are doing are they're flopping, right? They got players going down with injuries. And our guys were having a conversation pretty heated on the show about how they wonder about the integrity of the game and how that fits into the integrity of the game. I'm not sure you can be pro Dan Lanning throwing 12 men out there on the field in the final seconds of that big game and anti players flopping to help your defense get a break, help your defense get a blow.
Well, they've been doing that forever. I mean, they did it back in my day and it's more defensively, like you said, but I mean, how do you determine whether a guy actually has a cramp in his calf or he doesn't, you know? I mean, do you restrict that player from plays? So if they do go down, do you say, all right, that player that went down with a supposed cramp in his calf has to sit for 5 plays or something along those lines?
Or like when you lose your helmet in the game and you have to sit out for the next play?
Yeah, sure, immediately. But that's just in college. In the pros, you do not, I believe. So would that be a good thing? I don't know. I mean, it's a violent game. It's a lot of moving parts. How do you determine whether, oh, he didn't have a cramp or he did have a cramp?
Well, and that's the thing. Are you asking these officials now to become doctors?
Yeah.
You know, where they're trying to eyeball whether or not, you know, oh, that is a Charlie horse. I can see the muscle spasming. Or, that's a fake one and penalty. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot to put on the referees who already, you know, have their plates full. You know, we can question the officiating, you know, from an NFL standpoint last night and the Jets Bills game. I know people were talking about that this morning on the old socials. So yeah, I think it's a very tricky spot to exist in because on one hand, it is a strategy. On one hand, you got to take the time for the injury. But on the other hand, Chew, there's this whole integrity argument of like, you are compromising the integrity of the game. You sort of make a unwritten, unstated promise to honor the integrity of the game when you set foot on the field, and by not doing that, it's a bad look. I honestly don't know where I stand. I almost think, like, if the loophole exists and you're not taking advantage of it, you're not trying, right?
Well, like, I don't think I'd have a problem, Jen, with inside of 2 minutes, Much like they do the runoff, yeah, if a player goes down, regardless of the injury or whatever, he's got to sit out three plays or five plays because you do get into a rhythm offensively and you don't want that rhythm disturbed. And if it's something that, you know, the injury is in question, then I don't think I would have a problem with that. I think that's kind of fair.
So similarly then, you feel okay with the Dan Lanning thing. You're okay with Dan Lanning saying, we intentionally threw 12 guys out there on the field late in that game to draw the penalty, to lose the time on the clock, to put Ohio State in a tougher position to go down the field and win.
No, I don't have a problem with it. Could they have can you decline that penalty? Now, to get rid of, you know, do away with that.
Can you, because it's procedural? Like it.
Well, they may have to change that, though, because it is a loophole.
It seems like there's ways to work around that rule existing, and even the injury stuff. I do find it hard to, and not to poke fun or disparage any of your colleagues. The college football and integrity thing are two words that I have a hard time marrying.
They don't go hand in hand.
Yeah, those are... And it's not the people talking about it oftentimes, but let's be honest. What Alabama did in their recruiting process wasn't always above board. Georgia can be part of that. You can Clemson, like, name them all. Integrity. Yeah. How can you criticize integrity in one part when everyone isn't practicing in the other, to me, is interesting.
Maybe it's one of those things where you have to use it sparingly. You have to use it more sparingly. If you keep going back to the well, the fake injuries or the drawing a penalty to put the other team in a bad position, like, but I think that the game, Oregon versus Ohio State, that one came down to the wire. You're looking for every single advantage. Sometimes we talk about how thin the margin is between winning and losing. Seems like Dan Lanning is pretty proud of himself. They're calling him a genius for knowing that loophole and practicing that loophole with his team should they find themselves in that situation. And Nick Saban told us in one of our production meetings they would practice all the things. Any potential situation.
Yeah.
Late in the game, a guy runs out of bounds. Late in the game, this happens. Late in the game, like all of those things so that they are prepared for it so it isn't like a jarring, we've never done this before. We don't know how to handle the pressure and the circumstances right now. So to me, it's probably Lanning just taking a page out of Saban's book on that. I just find it interesting that anytime somebody does something different like this, Chewy, you mentioned the Vrabel thing. It begins by being like, what a bonehead! Wait, hold on. They did it on purpose?
Yeah.
What a genius! And then it's like, and then if it happens too many times, you're like, oh, now you're not upholding the integrity of the game. What an interesting cycle we are in on these conversations of taking advantage of loopholes in football.
What I appreciate out of Lanning is, it was pretty clear what happened as I was observing that. And he just admitted it. Yeah, kind of. That's what we did. We had that plan. That is a part of the rule book. And he didn't try and obfuscate and, you know, dodge it. Like, hey, it's a rule. It exists. Sorry. We're going to do everything we can to win, especially against Ohio State.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised how many players don't even know the rules of the game.
Oh, wow.
And there are a lot. That's what I loved about Belichick, because he would, every day, he would teach the players something that he thought they didn't know. Because there are goofy rules. Like, I never realized the punt return rule, I think, until I got into the NFL, where is if the kicking team touches the ball and the ball is not down, the receiving team can still pick it up, fumble, the kicking team gets it back, and the receiving team still retains possession.
Correct. The Packers love that rule. They also had the loophole one with the, where was it, Randall Cobb stood 1 foot out of bounds to touch the ball to get the ball at the 35 for like the improper kick. The Packers love that. I think Jane Reed tried it, but the ball had been downed already in the end zone on Sunday.
Well, and Aaron Rodgers has been, you know, notorious for the quote-unquote loopholes in games.
Yeah.
See, obviously, the free play is something he has taken advantage of for years. Even when the play is, you know, whistled dead, he's still going to try to throw it up and make a play. And then also the play clock. We have talked about that, where he knows that the when it hits zero, he still has half a second to get the ball off before the official is able to call it and flag it. So he has always taken advantage of that as well. Those are mini loopholes in the game that have benefited the Packers over the years. So I find it fascinating. I find it interesting, just this idea of the integrity of the game. Are they taking advantage of loopholes? Should they be doing it? How does it affect the players? You know, what message are you sending and all of those type of things? And Ryan from Iguanago weighing in saying, I do enjoy the fact that it happened to Ohio State because there is no team that people love to hate more than Ohio State. We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Chewy has power rankings coming up next. Stick around.
You are listening to Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
Any of those things because it exceeds... It's like, I'm sorry, I'm burping up my apple right there. That's what that was. I wasn't pausing for effect. I literally was burping
my
apple.
Can we just go to break?
No.
On 94.5 ESPN.
Enjoy the last moments of summer knowing your money is growing with Great Midwest Bank. Make a deposit and watch your savings soar. Feel the freedom of financial stability while you enjoy the last rays of summer. From high-yield savings to easy online access, we make managing your money simple. Let Great Midwest Bank be your financial oasis in every season. Visit GreatMidwestBank.com to see what products GMB has for you.
It's Chewy's favorite segment of the week.
Hey, big guy, you catch the game?
It's power rankings time on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You catch the game last night?
Can I say yes to you?
What will the big guy have in store for us today?
See the game last night?
Which game?
Any of them.
I feel at a significant disadvantage here, Chew.
Why?
I haven't done power rankings all season.
Oh, all season?
I think I was here week one. Every other Tuesday, I've been gone.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
This is going to tell us a lot.
This is going to be an adventure.
Whether you cheat or not. This list, I believe, is more about who's not in than who is in. That's your hint. So with that, give me number 10.
How about the Seattle Seahawks?
I have the 49ers tabbed for the last spot.
Joshy is on the board. What? The San Francisco 49ers are 10. They beat Seattle this week.
That'll do it.
They're figuring it out. They're not as dangerous right now, but I think a lot like the Packers, they'll be in it at the end of the year. So, give me 9.
How about the Green Bay Packers?
I put the Commies here.
Josh is 2-0.
Holy moly.
Jen, it's getting a little NFC North on us here. Josh is up 2-0. Washington Commanders are 9. I'm coming around to Minnesota. I'm not coming around to Washington.
Really?
I think they're going to hit some bumps in the road. Yeah. I mean, are you guys in on Washington? Do you think they win the East?
I do.
I don't think they do. You do?
I do.
Okay. Josh?
Yes, I believe they do.
Oh, really? Okay. All right. 8.
Green Bay?
I think it's Green Bay or it's the Buccaneers, but let's go Green Bay.
You're both correct. Green Bay
yes.
is 8.
On the board.
I think that based upon the teams that aren't in, I think this is a little high for them. Because, Jen, I treat this kind of like the college football playoff committee.
Uh-huh.
Right? If your records are the same, then you go to strength of schedule. And I think Green Bay's strength of schedule is pretty weak compared to 11 and 12. And even 13.
Who are 11 and 12? You don't want to tell us?
Okay, I don't think you're going to guess them. But Pittsburgh is 11 uh-huh. at 4 and 2, and their wins are more impressive than Green Bay's.
Okay.
Atlanta is at 12. They're 4 and 2. Their wins are more impressive than Green Bay. And Philadelphia at 3 and 2. beat Green Bay. So I just don't understand how they compile these lists. I really
So Philadelphia, it feels like they've got major problems there, right? Like Sirianni, I know there was a whole conversation about him bringing his kids out to the podium to kind of shield him from some of the critical questions that he might be facing. Atlanta, I still think the Bucs win that division. Not saying that that makes Atlanta a bad team, but Atlanta, I got questions about. Like, do you think Kirk Cousins keeps this up all season?
I do. Okay. I mean, I don't think he's going to be great, but he's and he's not going to be an MVP candidate. But, I mean, Kirk Cousins is a pretty good quarterback, and they have a signature win against Tampa Bay. And Tampa Bay's playing very well right now. So I just don't get their rhyme or reason right
now.
Well,
I will go with Tampa Bay next on the list then.
Yeah.
You're both correct. Tampa Bay is on the list.
Now, this is where I struggle, because I feel like I know the top five.
What do you think of Tampa Bay? What do you think of Tampa Bay, though? Are they going to be there in the end?
I think they win the division.
Because they're playing real well, but how far? Could they go NFC Championship game?
I don't think so.
I always feel like Baker has a ceiling.
Yeah.
They're playing pretty well, then, and they're putting up points, too. So, I don't know. They could fizzle out. All right, six.
Okay, this is the tricky one for me because I think I know the top five. So, if my top five are... I think it's got to... The Bills at number six?
I put the Bills at six.
The Bills are at six. Do they deserve to be at six, or do they deserve to be higher?
Okay. That game last night was not their best work.
No.
On the road, the Jets are
and missing
better,
Cook,
I
right?
Think, than 2-4.
What's the name of that backup guy? Was it Davis? Davis. Ooh, he was good last night.
I mean, their wins are the Cardinals, Dolphins, Jags, and Jets.
Oof.
Lost to the Ravens, lost to the Texans.
So, and I assume that the Ravens and the Texans are above on this power rankings list because I don't think they're beyond 13 because you filled us in there. So they lost to two teams that are above them in the power rankings, right?
Yes.
At five, I have the Ravens.
Same.
The Ravens are five.
So again, this to me starts to feel easy because I know, I think, the top five teams in the
league. Just records.
How much better would the Ravens be if they got Devontae? Would they be better than the Chiefs? If they got Devontae? Like, I don't know why this is taking so long.
Because they're demanding a second, right?
And people aren't willing to pay.
A second is fair. You think Devontae really has a hamstring issue, or is it just like they don't want him to get hurt more because they want to trade him? I think, yeah. All right, four.
Four.
One. I have the Texans.
Ooh, I have the Lions.
I think the way they won against the Cowboys bumps the Lions back up.
Okay, all right. What do we got you?
We have the Texans at four.
The way that the Lions were,
but the Cowboys stink.
Yeah, they do. But the way they were like taunting them,
I don't know if they stink. They're schizophrenic.
Football doctor.
Yes. Is this a noon game?
Yeah. You're talking about Packers Texans.
Noon whiteout.
Is it too early to bump it to? Is it too early in the season to bump it to a prime time? There's no flexing. That's stupid.
I believe the flexing doesn't start for a few weeks yet.
Why? You got a good game on the game of the week. Put it in prime time.
I think it's to keep your TV partners as happy as possible before you start ripping games from them.
All right, three.
Lions.
So you don't think that the Lions win bumped them up over the undefeated team? So
I think it's hard. Yeah, I think it's hard to put them above an undefeated.
Lions are three. How much will Hutchinson hurt them?
Well, he's a really good player, obviously.
Couple losses.
Is there a metric, as far as you know, that like does each individual player sort of a wins above replacement in the NFL?
Some try. It's not effective yet.
Yeah, it's not.
The best way to really figure it out is what happens post him not playing. And, like, the team stats, like, sort of the EPA sort of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that'll be something we're keeping an eye on this weekend when they take on the Vikings, who I think are at number two on this list.
Yes.
They are two, and Kansas City is one. So who's elite? Are you putting Minnesota as elite?
No.
If they beat Detroit, then they're if they beat Detroit, Joshy, they are elite.
Yeah, this is a huge weekend in the division. Bears are on the bye, but Packers taking on Texans. Chewy, you say that's a must-win game just in order to keep pace. And whether it's keeping pace with the Vikings or keeping pace with the Lions, right? Like, you just don't want to drop games with these two teams sort of firing on all cylinders. And then you got the NFC North cannibalization.
I think the elite teams are the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Ravens.
Really? Okay. You know what's crazy? I was thinking during the break how five wins with a tiebreaker might keep you out of the playoffs.
What do you mean?
Five losses. Yeah, sorry, like, five losses.
I was going to say, five wins will keep you out of the playoffs.
Yeah. 12 five losses. Could five losses keep you out of the playoffs with a tiebreaker?
I doubt
it. I think it could.
I mean, it could mathematically, yes, but it's very unlikely.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think the...
Again, you're talking about a 12-5 team.
Yeah. I don't think a 12-5 has a 12-5 team ever missed the playoffs?
Well, that'd be tough because they only recently went to the 17 game schedule. So you'd have to go, has a 12 win team ever, well, again, 12-5 missed the playoffs?
In case you guys were wondering, I think there's a little disrespect when it comes to the Bears. They are 16, and ahead of them is Dallas and Seattle. Which doesn't feel right.
According to the interwebs, a 12-win NFL team has never missed the playoffs. But the Patriots at 11-5, which again, 16-game season, in 2008 did miss the playoffs. So there you go, Chew.
That's crazy.
The more you know.
Good stuff.
We got to take a break. Good job, Joshy. I think you ran the table. Did you get all of them?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Did you?
I mean, I've done this every single week at this point.
I have not. Again, I haven't done it since week one. I haven't even looked at power rankings since week one. So that was a good exercise.
Do we accuse him of cheating?
Joshy?
He did run the table.
He did?
Yes.
I mean, you just got to look at the records, guys. Like, it's pretty obvious to me that a team like the Pittsburgh Steelers and Chargers aren't going to be in the top 10. Okay. So you just got to figure it out.
Yeah, but the Pittsburgh Steelers were 11.
Yeah, I think at least there should be an investigation.
Who's going to do it? Who's going to do it?
I'm looking at the records.
Hey, I'm 13.1, so you know I ain't doing it.
You just throw out the accusation.
The self-awareness.
Yes.
All right, Jen, Gabe, and Chewy rolls on right after this.
This is Jen, Gabe, and Chewy.
You can just save yourself so much time by going, okay, we like this guy, this guy, this guy. Let's take a look at all the different things he did at the combine. I just hit my phone, and now my hand is just tingling.
What is with you two today? Jesus. Do you know how to function?
I just like...
On 94.5 ESPN.
Chew, I know you still got a little hesitation, but it feels like you might be coming around to this Jeff Hafley defense at this point. True or false?
Is it better than the previous defensive coordinator? Yes. I am on half the defense. How's that? I'm in on half.
Yeah, 13.1. We know.
Yeah, 13. Very good. Yeah, if they want to go all the way, they got to find some way to create pressure on the quarterback. That's why I'm waiting. I'm telling you, by San Francisco, I'll know if they're going to be a serious contender or not, because they're going to play some pretty good offenses along the way there. And it's going to tell us a lot, I believe. I mean, Rashad Gary and Lucas Van Ness, 6 games in with 2 sacks, and the one Gary had was a gift. That's not good enough to get it done. Eight players got to, I've said it a million times, eight players got to play like eight players, and C's got to play like B's. That's how you win Super Bowls.
So the fact that the secondary, and it's not just the secondary, right? As you guys well know, football is a team sport. A lot of times success with the secondary is because of the first and second level as well. On Sunday, the 2024 Packers produced 3 more takeaways that extended the team's streak with multiple takeaways to 6 games to start the season. This is the first time a Packers defense has had multiple takeaways in 6 straight games to start a season since 1996, Chew. Which you half remember.
Yes. A long time ago.
Sure, but you were there. Let's hear from Matt LaFleur when asked about if he could tell during training camp that this team was going to be very good at taking the ball away.
Yeah, they did a great job. I think we had a lot of turnovers offensively throughout the course of training camp. And so it's a double-edged sword when it's happening in practice. It's great for the defense, bad for the offense. But, you know, I still think, you know, our guys just, they're very mindful of it. And we stress it, and we drill it, but ultimately they gotta make it happen.
This is what Minnesota used to do back in the day when we played them. We'd always have emphasis that week of practice because Minnesota's philosophy, what they taught is first guy in, hold the guy up, secure him, and then one of the guys who are assisting on the tackle just always try to rip the ball out. And they were very good at it. I think they led the league back in the 90s when it comes to turnovers. But that was a point of emphasis during the week for the Minnesota Vikings. And I would assume, because there's been so many turnovers this year with the Packers, that people are going to address that as well. I mean, teams are going to address that as well.
What teams concern you the most, Chew? What teams on the Packers' schedule concern you the most if the pass rush remains as futile as it's been? You know, at one point, I think headed into last week's game, they were one of the worst teams in pass rush win rate. I've got Joshie Efferding, the most recent numbers. But what is the type of team? What is the type of quarterback? Who hurts you the most if you can't get pressure with 4?
I think even though they're top receiver out this week, this is going to be a hell of a test because, you know, much like when Love went down for those 2 games and you had to bring in a kid who'd only been there for 18 games, they won those games because their roster is so much better than who they were playing. And this is going to be like the Texans game this week. I mean, they're missing the one D lineman that's suspended and their top receiver. But their roster is so good, and they're coached very well, that this is going to be a test. I just don't want, you know, if the Packers do win handily by 14 or 17, you know there's going to be detractors saying, well, they were out with their top receiver, or they were without their D lineman. Look, everyone goes through this during this time of year, and the Packers have been very fortunate because outside of Love missing 2 games, they've been pretty damn healthy. So it's almost like, okay, you're kind of waiting because there are a lot of top players around the league that are going out. And they've been really healthy to this point, which is what they're going to need if they want to get to where they get to. But I would, you know, the Texans are going to be a hell of a test. The Jaguars scare me. The Jaguars scare me if the Packers win this next game handily. That is ripe for a letdown game, okay? They're going against a team who they thought they would be better than they were. They're coming down to Florida, where it's still pretty hot down here, and that has the makings of a letdown game. You can't, when the division is this competitive and this strong, you can't have those, and it's only natural, too. And the fact that they're playing the Lions next week, that should be a red flag for LaFleur. You know, those are the weeks we hated, Jen, because even though we beat a team of the Texans' caliber pretty handily, and you go into that first team meeting after the game, you think everything's going to be rosy and great. And Holmgren would go into that screaming and yelling. And it took me a couple of years to like, what the hell is this? Because you, as a young guy, you don't understand the psychology of football. But then you figure out to the point where you're like, nah, it's a yell week. I can tell it's a yell week when it shouldn't be, when most players wouldn't think it's a yell week. So that game concerns me. And then you got a stretch. You got a stretch of Lions, Bears, Niners. You got to come out of that. You have to come out of that 2-1. 2-1. To be able to stay pace with, the rest of the North. So these next couple weeks are going to be, grab your left one, or middle one, or right one. Whichever one you got to grab.
How many do you have? Feels like a luxury happening over there. Joshy, what were the numbers for the pass rush win rate after this past weekend's game?
There was a big jump, Jen.
Really?
Yeah. They've gone from 32nd, worst in the league, to 30th.
Oh, still bad.
Third worst in the league.
What can they do, though, Joshy? Because there's been a lot of talk about Rashawn Gary's get-off rate.
Yes.
And it's very bad. He's very slow. It's one of the worst in the league, which seems to be a trend when we're talking about this unit. I don't expect him to get faster. I don't expect him to react quicker. What are the things that this unit can actually do to improve the pass rush? Short of wholesale changes, which we know they're not going to do.
Yeah, there isn't much else they can do at this point. Rashawn Gary just has to start winning more. Lucas Van Ness has to be more productive than he does. And Preston Smith needs to step up. You're going to need guys like Carl Brooks and Kenny Clark to improve from the interior because they're trying all sorts of stuff up front. Jeff Hafley has maintained that he's not worried about it. But if you watch the way he's attacking with his defensive line, it would show you he's worried about it because they're trying new things and they're going different ways. They're running stunts. They're trying to bring Rashawn Gary around on stuff. It's not the same. Right now, the only way the Packers seemingly are getting pressure is by bringing extra people. That is working right now. I don't know if that's going to work against a team like the Lions, whose offensive line is quite good. I do think the secondary is so talented that you do have a little more leeway than most teams would, but it's pretty simple. Rashawn Gary, Lucas Van Ness, and Preston Smith all need to just get home more. There's no other way around it.
Which ain't going to happen because you're going into week 7 here. I mean, you're a little beat up. You know, I talk about how the 100% from training camp chips away down to the night. You just don't have time to work on. I mean, if you don't have moves at this point, you're not going to get into the middle of the season and say, oh, I've already, I just developed this thing called the humpy. I'm watching a lot of film on Reggie White. I can do that now. It's not going to happen.
Right.
I mean, if you were to give grades right now, Rashawn Gary would get a what? F?
Well, again, it depends on what metric you want to use, but win rate, I think I saw that at one point there were only 7 slower than him in the league.
Yeah. That's on his get off. For whatever reason, he's not getting off the ball particularly quick. The other part of it is, like, so he was, last time I checked, about middle of the league in terms of, like, how he was getting pressure, his rate of pressure. That is simply not good enough for what he's being paid. A league average guy also typically gets more sacks than he has. He has 1 right now. Keyshawn Nixon has more sacks. Ezrin Cooper has more sacks. Like there is value to pressure and creating, making a quarterback, but you also have to bring them down. That's what he's paid to do. He's not paid to get close. He's paid to bring them to the ground.
What grade would you give Quay Walker? God, I missed on him.
I think he's been better than people have given him credit for.
I do too.
I think really? he makes.
But he's not special. He's not special.
No, I think the special one's Ezrin Cooper.
Which is interesting, too, because you are the one who is adamant on this show about needing to have patience with quarterbacks. Understanding that there is a big learning curve going from where they were. I still feel like we don't give enough credit to the learning curve at some of those other positions. I think he's been hamstrung.
Three.
Yeah.
But 2 years under Joe Barry.
I know, but still, football's football. You know what I mean? If you're special
It shows.
It does. It just does. I look at my jump from, you know, my first year to my third year. It was miles.
Put it this way, I've never seen Quay do what I've seen Edrin Cooper do in this limited amount of snaps.
Yeah.
Which is a big difference.
But the good news is you've got Edrin Cooper there.
Yeah.
Like, not to oversimplify, but if you feel like a guy is underperforming, replace him.
Yeah, he's not going to get replaced. He's too valuable to what the Packers want to do. He knows too much. He's too consistent at that. He will make incorrect calls. He will miss a tackle in the hole. But, like, Isaiah McDuffie's not good enough. They keep taking his snaps down.
Well, sometimes he's in the wrong hole.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys this. I didn't have a chance to watch it. How bad was the Minnesota game? I mean, when they were up 28-0, were you guys like, what the hell?
That was a game that spiraled very quickly because they didn't get any of those initial stops. I didn't feel as bad about it by the end of the game, but it was Jordan Love made some mistakes and the Packers couldn't stop literally anything.
Okay. I have no feel for this game against...
The Texans?
Against the Texans, because I cannot go off of a game against the Rams and a game against Arizona.
So you're just saying you just still don't know who the Packers are? What's their identity?
Nope.
What can they hang their hat on?
Here's the thing. All the people with the analytics, the FPI, the adjusted net yards, they're all telling you the Packers are like a top 7-8 team who have been consistently getting better. Now, they haven't won against the competition, which Chewy has made quite clear, and there's no way to dispute that. But they think, based on the way the Packers are turning the ball over and the way they create big plays and score, they're one of the better teams in the league.
Yeah, and if I had to pick some of the categories that I would want my team to excel in, those are a couple of them. Explosive plays and taking the ball away. Winning the turnover battle. Not confident.
Not against the Texans, no. I think the Texans are just as good as the Packers. Like, that's... To me, that's a coin flip game. But I feel good now, after the Cardinals game, that the Packers are going to take care of business against the teams they should, and hopefully they win a couple of the ones against the teams where it's a toss-up. That's kind of how it's going to go.
You won't have confidence, Josh. If they lose this week, you can't have any confidence. Any.
Confidence in what?
Headed into
them
the Jaguars
good teams.
Game?
Oh. Them beating good teams.
Well, then if they go out there and beat the Lions, you will.
So if they lose to the Texans, that's three losses. Say they split with the Lions, that's four. Say they split with the Bears, that's five.
So we're splitting with every team? Are they going to get the victory over the Vikings the second time they play?
I'd like to say yes. I mean, I'd like to say yes.
Just put a pin in it, will you? Just
Put it this way. I think six losses do not get them in the playoffs.
All right, here. I want you to think about this. Jared asks us, I want to know who you want to win between the Vikings and the Lions. I think you could make a good case for either team to take this one and benefit the Packers. Hold on to it.
Sorry.
We'll come back to it right after this. You've heard me talk about Professional Construction Inc. over the years. We've enjoyed having them help us with our home projects. As you might know, we're not the most handy people, but you know what's good? If you're not the most handy people, knowing people who are, and Mike and Michelle and the PCI team certainly are. They operate a family-owned company. They believe in building relationships and doing exceptional work on your projects. Learn more about PCI at ProfessionalConstructionInc.com. That's ProfessionalConstructionInc.com.
Here we go.
All right, Chu, who do you want to win this weekend between the Vikings or the Lions? Which is better for the Packers?
Minnesota.
Why?
Because they're not going to catch them.
They're not going to catch the Vikings, so you're saying just let them go. Just let them run ahead.
Battle with Detroit.
It's only two games.
Battle
no,
with
it's
Detroit.
Three. Right now, it's a soft three. It's a soft three.
Yeah.
Because they have the tiebreaker right now.
I don't want to hear about soft threes, you guys. Come on. We'll take a break for the whole day. Will do touches next on ESPN Milwaukee.